Hi guys, I'm fantasy author J.H. Fleming.
And I am science fiction and fantasy author Philip Dreyer Duncan. How goes your nano, J.H.?
Oh, very slowly. I will say it has, so us deciding to do nano got me to write a bunch more words. So I was kind of in a funk with this book a little bit before I started nano. And so that's helped to kind of break that. I still haven't kept up with nano's daily word count, but I don't really care because I'm going to finish this book either way. So I'm just glad it's been helping with the funk I was in.
That's good. I have managed to keep the word count. This week has been very tough. Very tough.
Yeah, every week's been tough for me. So I talked about it a bit before, but since I started the new day job on top of all the other things I do, I was already feeling like I never had time for anything. So that's still pretty much true, but I've figured out how to get a little bit back to get a little bit more writing by doing nano. But yeah, it's still a struggle.
I have gotten a disturbing amount of words done. It has surprised me. Mm-hmm. I forgot how fast I could write when I really went after it, you know?
Right.
It's been a while.
Yeah. I had one really good sprint, whatever day that was, yesterday, the day before, where I just did 25 minutes and I got over 800 words, which is amazing. So if every sprint were like that, I only need a couple hours and I'd be done every day.
Yeah.
But more often than not, it drags out to an all day thing. Cause my brain doesn't want to work.
Yeah. If I can get my head in the right space, which for this, I've been somewhat forcing it there where I just don't worry how ugly it is at all. And I just go full bore flow state, then I can get about 1,000 words in 30 minutes. And that adds up pretty quickly. I do have a weird thing though, where like for me, and we've talked about this before, and it's a constant balance between the land of the plotter versus the pantser, right? So part of the reason I was able to go so fast, especially the first week or so of Nano, is that I sort of knew what I wanted to write, but I hadn't actually written any of it down. So I had no outline, nothing. Well, that's not completely true. So the very first couple of days, I had originally written this as a short story. The opening for this novel is a short story several years ago. So I did have something of a script for the first, what would become the first chapter and a half, although I added quite a lot. But then I ran into this new ground where I had ideas and I knew things that I wanted to have happen at the beginning, but I had not done any kind of outline. So those I was able to hammer through very quickly. But then as I got further in, I started getting into territory where I knew where I was headed, but I didn't know sort of scene by scene what I needed to have happen. So that was fine. And that was fine. But there comes a point where the only way to describe it is the story starts getting a little loose to me when I pants maybe too much and
yeah.
Starts sort of getting ugly and things are changing on me. And it starts to feel like it's out of control. And that's sort of, I guess, historically where having a little bit more of an outline helps me not feel that way. But then if I have too much, I start losing a little bit of momentum because then I don't have as much discovery. So it's an interesting balance.
Yeah, I was going to say it's definitely a balance thing. For myself, I've historically been a pantser, but ended up with a couple novels where pantsing was not working and I really needed to add in some plotting and structure. And then for my most recent book, the one I was struggling with, I had done a lot of plotting on it. And I'm kind of thinking that might have killed it a bit. So I'm trying to still kind of keep in mind the direction I was going to go with the plot, but I'm not looking at my outline anymore. And I'm just kind of winging it with like, okay, this is going to happen now. And I feel like that's helped a lot.
Yeah. I'm coming to a place where I think I'm at 37 or 38,000 words for the month so far. And
yep.
I'm very much thinking I might pause when I hit my 50 instead of keeping the foot on the gas, because I really feel like it's, this one is getting a little out of hand on me. And with the sort of structure inherent to this story, I can't really let it get too out of control. So
right.
Kind of thinking I might have to pump the brakes on it when I get to my 50,000 words.
Sounds like a good idea. Sometimes that's what you have to do.
Yeah, in all reality, probably what will happen is I'll probably jump back over to the Blade Mage book. I was half to two-thirds, three-quarters done. I don't even know. So I was pretty far into what will be the fifth Blade Mage novel, The Southern Circle. And I paused that to do the Nano thing. So I might just go ahead and jump back over there, get that finished, and then come back to this one.
Yeah, that's another thing I've been struggling with is other novels that my brain wants to work on. So we'd gotten those new notebooks a while back that I think we mentioned on a previous episode. And I started a sequel novel to one I'd, you know, written before and will be submitting soon. But I started allowing myself to write that sequel novel. So like that one is kind of lingering in my head. And then there have been a couple other ideas that I've had for a while, and they just keep coming back and they won't leave me alone. So my brain's like, I want to work on those instead of what I should be working on.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said for the discipline, you know, but there's also like sometimes if a story idea is just too powerful, I think you just got to go for it. You know, if I hadn't been into that, I wouldn't have Ghost, which I haven't really done anything with yet, but I very much love that book and I'm very glad I stopped whatever I was doing at the time and wrote it, you know?
Right. So I'd like to talk about that a little bit more for a second, because for what we're doing, we've talked about, you know, basically having a plan for novels. Like we have novels that we will be doing the rapid release method with, some we're going to be traditionally publishing. So like when you have those very specific kind of plans for your books, these novels that just pop up in your mind and won't leave you alone, they kind of derail the schedule and the plan a little bit.
I like to think of it less of a plan and more of a strategy, but I'm right there with you.
Well, for example, so the one I'm working on now, it's the third in a series that I do plan to rapid release. So if I stop everything and work on these other novels that keep lingering in my head, like I could delay that series by a year or more just by doing that.
Yeah, I think there is a very much like a series fatigue that you can kind of run into, right? So, and that might just be what you're like, I've hit that with like the Blade Mage, right? And I did it with the Moonshine Wizard before. And I know there's people very not happy with me that there was no sequel to the Moonshine Wizard. They would probably be equally unhappy to know that I in fact did write a sequel to the Moonshine Wizard. I just didn't like it. I wasn't happy with it when it was done. You know, because
I get to read some of it at least.
When I did that, so I'd written the Moonshine Wizard, and it came in at 156,000 words. And then I did all the prequel short stories for it that I thought would be fun to do. And those combined are like another 60 or 70,000 words. So I was, you know, well over 200,000 words into that world. And I think I was fatigued with it. And I went ahead and tried to do a sequel. And I think, you know, I actually am like, I don't even want to say this out loud because somebody will hold me to it or want to know more. But there has been it after all this time, that one has been nagging at the back of my mind a little bit more recently.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's what happened, right? I think I got burnt out and then I was trying to power through that second one and it didn't click for me the way it should have. And I was very early on and I don't think I knew how to fix it or identify the problem I was having.
Right.
And then I did the same thing with the Blade Mage. But I better knew what to do about it, right? I knew to step away from it for a little bit. Then I wrote the X-Men of Autumn. You know.
Yeah, I almost and this is just me kind of thinking out loud, I'm wondering if it would be better when you have a series, regardless of however many books are in it, to kind of plan in like, okay, I'm going to write two or three books in this series, and then I'm going to stop and work on something completely different and then come back to it, just because we know that that series fatigue is a thing. And so by knowing like, okay, I just need to finish this book and then I can work on something else that my brain wants to work on. That can kind of combat that a little bit.
I think so. I think this is going to be one of those things that's very individualized, right? So I think for me, I kind of know it's 1 to 2 books move to the, depending on how big the books are, right? It's 1 to 2 books and then jump to the, and jump to something else for a little bit and then come back, I think is the right answer.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to try that. So maybe press forward, finish this one, do all the editing I had planned for other books. And then when I actually sit down to write, I think I'll just go ahead and plan to do one of the ones that's been nagging me and then come back to this one.
I think that's a good plan. I actually wrote myself a schedule that I've never held to. Maybe I will try this year, but I actually built in like a rotation that was like, I'm going to do like a Blade Mage, and then I'm going to do something entirely new that I will shop around, and then I will do a Blade Mage. And then for like a breath of fresh air, I'll write like maybe the next Assassins. Right. And because that's something short and fun I can do, that I already have a home for as soon as I'm done with it. And then I would go right back to another Blade Mage. And then, you know, and then that's sort of the full cycle I would work through. I just haven't actually done that yet.
Right. Yeah. I think I'm going to, so I am the sort who makes myself a schedule years in advance, and I'm constantly shifting things around and changing them as the mood strikes me. But yeah, I think I'm going to have to do another restructure here pretty soon and allow myself to work on some of these other projects that keep coming up in my head.
That's something you do.
I think that'll make me happy.
That's something you do that I absolutely could not do. So JH will have like a plan out like 3 or 4 years on which books she's going to write each of the years. And I cannot I'll make a plan so far as like, when I finish this book, I want to do something new. And then when that comes, when I get to that point, I will decide right then and there what it's going to be, because to me that keeps it. I think if I decide ahead of time, then I think about that too much, and that can lead to the distraction from the current project. So I like to try to stay dedicated to what I'm working on at the time, and try to keep good momentum on that, because I've seen what happens to myself if I let it fall. So I try not to be too far out, because then I just either won't get to it, or by the time I do, I won't be excited about it anymore.
Yeah, for me, it does kind of the opposite. So I did mention that I'll plan a few years out, but I'm constantly fiddling with it and changing things as, you know, some stories linger in my head and become more exciting. So then they move to the top. And I'll fiddle with that up until the moment I'm writing the book. And then even then, like, I'm writing the one now and I still want to work on other things. So it's more like, I'll quote Pirates of the Caribbean and say it's more like a guideline of what I'm going to be working on.
Yeah.
You know, it may or may not change.
You know, the other problem I ran into for myself, and I hit this last year and it really waylaid me, was what year is it? It's 2023 now. So in 2021, I wrote quite a lot. Like, I wrote a lot of fresh stuff, but the problem was that I was not editing it at the same time. So then in 2022, I edited over 1 million words, and still, so in 2022, I edited over 1 million words. This year I have edited over 600,000 words, and I am still just so far behind on where I need to get caught up on the editing. And I think by letting myself get too stacked up, that was Murder, She Wrote last year.
Right. Yeah, I've had that as well. I know I've got, basically, once I finish writing this draft of this novel, I've got The Myth of Light, which you just finished last month. So I'll finally finish up edits on that. And then I'm hoping by the time I've done that, you'll have my other one done. And then I'll just jump right into that one. I'll probably still let myself go ahead and start the next book, but I won't have like super strict word, like daily word counts every day until those editing drafts are done. Like those are going to be the priority.
Yeah. I don't know.
To stay on top of those and not let them, you know, build up and get too backed up on me.
I feel like I want to keep the momentum for writing that I have coming out of Nano, but that just means that the next layer of it is I have to figure out how to pile the editing on top of that successfully. So maybe like Decembro, Nano Decembro becomes Nano Edito Decembro. So maybe instead of writing, so there's been days, I'll have to look at my numbers when I get to the end and see what my average sort of was. Because most days I've been clocking in well over 2,000. I think that's probably the average. There was a few days I got like right on, one day I got 4,000 and a few that I got 3,000. But I think 2,000 was sort of the average. So I'm wondering if I can keep a pace of say 1,500 to 2,000 a day. And then instead of getting the extra 1,000, or shooting for the extra 1,000, using that time to edit and maybe dig myself out of a hole that way.
Yeah, it's worth a try. Yeah, for me, just with all the extra jobs I have at the moment and the not as much time stuff, I'm pretty much going to be just, this is the priority project and I need to edit. And then if I have time for anything else, yeah, I'll write a little bit and that's going to be it, at least for the foreseeable future until something changes.
Yeah, that seems fair. Well, should we do the news?
Sure.
All right. So a while back on one of the episodes, we mentioned that Spotify was launching its new program for premium subscribers where they would get 15 hours of free audiobook listening time. And I guess that has officially gone live in the U.S. as of today, as I understand it. So for people who are premium members of Spotify, if you're already paying for that service for music or whatever, you now get 15 hours of free audiobook listening time. And I guess previously with Spotify for audiobooks, you just had to buy them, I guess. I haven't actually used it for that in full transparency. But I guess if you're a premium member, you now get 15 hours to listen to whatever audiobook you want. So I guess that's kind of cool.
Is that a one-time thing?
No, it's 15.
Like you listen to 15 hours and you're done?
15 hours per month.
Okay. That's what I was thinking, but wanted to clarify.
Yeah, so like we talked about it. I don't, you know, for us and the amount of audiobooks we listen to, it's not really ideal. But if you look at it through the lens of somebody who's already paying for premium service for the music, then cool. You get 15 hours of audiobooks you can listen to. So that's cool.
Yeah, not bad. All right, next thing, let's see. So Amazon had released a while back the category changes for books. So apparently they put out some sort of update on the KDP forum to kind of clarify questions people had around that. I haven't actually looked at it, so I don't know what sort of things they're talking about. But I guess apparently enough people had questions about it that they felt the need to put this out there. So if you're interested, that is the kdpcommunity.com, and it's in their forums under KDP categories update.
Yeah, it just basically says you can select up to 3 categories to help readers find your book. And then it talks about how they sort of they will place your book in categories themselves as well. And then it also talked about how they added new categories. So if you're an indie author, indie publisher, and you're curious about that, it is definitely worth poking your head over to the KDP forums to see what that's about.
Yeah.
All right. And this next one was less news and just hilarious to me. So there is a book club, and this book club has been reading the same book in one go since 1995. So this book club has been reading Finnegan's Wake by James Joyce for 28 years. And they finally finished it in October. So after 28 years, they've made it to the last page, have accomplished their mission, and it's done. So naturally, they are starting back over at page one, and they're going to keep this train rolling.
I have so many questions. I'm curious if, like, so, okay, so I'm imagining I'm in a book club. I have to read something with other people. Like, between reading chapters, I'm going to be reading other books. So, like, surely they've been reading other books this whole time, not just the one.
So I read most of the whole article about it. And there's, like, sort of a few things, right? So Finnegan's Wake is supposed to be one of, like, I guess the toughest books to read. And I guess James Joyce passed away while writing it. So there was never any clarity from the author about what he meant about certain passages and that sort of thing. What this, as I understand it, what they've been doing is they read it, like, they meet up and they read, like, a page of it and then try to kind of, like, decipher what it means and that sort of a thing. But I don't think it's really that these people are so dedicated to Finnegan's Wake or James Joyce so much as, like, it sort of started in earnest in 1995, where it's like, let's get some people together and see if we can understand this book. But I think it just became more of, like, a social thing for the members, and they just kind of have kept it going this whole time. So, it's kind of cool, actually, I think.
Yeah. I can't imagine meeting up. The social part I can get, but, like, then we're just talking about the same book for 28 years.
Yeah. And they've had members come and go, obviously.
Yeah. I was going to say, I guess I have no room to talk because I still reread The Lord of the Rings all the time and love talking about it. So I guess if you loved it like that, then yeah, I could talk about that for the rest of my life and never get tired of it. But man, they'd have to really love it.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. It's a fun story, though.
Yeah. All right. So the next thing, Goodreads is put out, what is it, like an article or a post? I'm not really sure where they posted this thing.
Their help forum.
On their help forum. Okay. Yeah. Basically, it's asking users to help prevent review bombing. So your review bombing is you have a bunch of people basically gathering together and attacking either an author or a specific book and just, you know, having all sorts of bad reviews or even talking about the author themselves. And so basically this is Goodreads asking people to help stop that.
Yeah. So they actually say in there, they say, we are committed to ensuring the reviews on Goodreads are trustworthy, relevant, and authentic for readers and authors. For that reason, Goodreads welcomes a wide variety of reviews, whether positive or negative, but prohibits reviews that are not relevant to the book, harass readers or authors, or attempt to artificially deflate or inflate the overall rating of the book. And then they go on to say, if you see content or behavior that does not meet our reviews or community guidelines, we encourage you to report it. And then they have some details about how to do that because they want to get on top of it. So that's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, I've definitely seen that sort of behavior more in the last few years. I guess maybe not recently, but I may have just not have been paying attention. But I can think of a couple titles where I knew that was the case, unfortunately. So I'm glad to see that they're trying to put a stop to it.
Remember, kids, only you can prevent forest fires. Smokey the Bear.
Prevent review bombing?
Only you can prevent review bombing. It doesn't roll off the tongue the same way.
Right.
But they should get a mascot.
Yes.
And guess what? We don't have any AI news today, so that's the news.
Ooh. All right, for our tools segment this time, we're going to talk about dictation software. So I don't have a whole lot of experience with this, but Phil has used some a little bit, so I will let him talk about those.
Yeah, so first off, though, just as we get started, I know immediately a bunch of people just immediately tuned out because they were like, no, I can't do that. I won't do it. I've tried it. It's the worst, blah, blah, blah. That's what I always hear from people all the time. And I would like to, really the main reason I wanted to talk about this is I wanted to try to convince you to maybe give it a try, but in a different way, right? Because early on, I did the same thing that everybody else who's tried it has done and complains about it, is I tried to just write with it and I couldn't get used to it. Like, it was weird trying to insert the punctuation, and I would find myself blathering, and it was hard to think the way I needed to tell my story the way I needed to. I get it. I get all of those things. But here's why I'm now an advocate. And I haven't actually been using it recently, but I will start again because it was very powerful for me. So what I was doing, because I like to write by hand a lot, and so what happens is when I write by hand, that is obviously way slower than typing. And then I have to type everything that I wrote by hand, which then takes a while as well, right? So instead of doing that, what I started using, and I was using the Dragon Naturally Speaking phone app, which I believe at the time, I haven't looked in a while, but it was like $15 a month, I think, or $10 a month. I can't remember exactly. But so what I would do is I would write however many pages, and I do that by hand. And then I would read from what I wrote by hand and dictate that into my phone and let it turn it into text. I wasn't stumbling over trying to write and dictate at the same time. I was just basically reading from a script, and I would see the punctuation and be able to say it. And what ended up happening when I would do that, it was actually quicker for me to dictate it to get it turned to text and then upload it to my computer and then do a quick edit to clean up any, you know, oddball things I said or that it kind of missed, than it would be for me to sit down and type up what I had written by hand. And then what happened is after I was doing that pretty regularly, it started to become more natural to me, and I started going way quicker with it and having less and less mistakes. And I started getting to a place where I was actually, because I write very shorthand when I write by hand, so like I won't build scenes out so much, but I was after a week or two getting to the place where I was actually adding text in that I hadn't written. So I was still reading like a script, but realizing the same way I would sitting at my keyboard that actually I needed a sentence here, I needed to change this way, and I would be able to go ahead and do that. And so I think if I would have stuck with it and kept doing that, I'm pretty confident I would have gotten to a place where, yes, I could write by dictation, and I would like to get back into it and do that again. At the very least, I was able to very quickly take my handwriting from handwriting to text on my computer way faster than typing.
Yeah, that's neat. I've never really messed with it at all, so I literally just know what other people have said about it. I have heard a ton of people recommend Dragon, so I feel like that'd be the place to start with any dictation software.
Yeah, somebody on Twitter mentioned another one that was free or cheaper, and I don't remember what it was. I will try to look it up real quick, though.
I have literally no experience with it. I think Scrivener might have a dictation option somewhere in their menu bar, but I've never messed with it. I'm kind of curious now. Let's see how it does.
I have used the I've used Microsoft's. So here's the thing too: if you don't want to pay for if you don't want to pay for Dragon or whatever, if you already have a Microsoft account, you can do it with Microsoft Word. I don't know if you can do it through like the phone app. I've not actually tried that, but I have used it sitting at my computer with a microphone, even at just the laptop's microphone. I've used it in Word and OneNote, I believe, and it's pretty good. The only thing is, like, at the time I was using Dragon, and when it comes to dictation software, you have to have words for commands, right? So, like, with Dragon, it would be like, JH was making a lot of noise while Phil was trying to do this part. Period. New line. New paragraph. Or no, new line indent. Open quotations. Why you make so much noise? Question mark. Close quotations. New line. So you have to, like, those are the commands, like, for Dragon, and some of the ones for Microsoft would be different. So I don't know that I would recommend trying to use two different ones, just because that part's going to get real squirrely. The other thing I would recommend too is, like, if you do try it, take, like, a little post-it note or, like, some kind of little card and write down all the commands so they're just in front of you. So as you're, like, you know, trying to do it, if you stumble for a second, there's a card right there to tell you what the command is that you need.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And also on the Dragon app, you can see it in real time, like, load onto the screen. And there's commands for, like, oh, I messed up, so delete, 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 and it'll take it back, and then you can just do it again real quick.
That's handy.
Yeah. Yeah, I really liked it. I think it's very valuable. And like I said, worst case scenario, it's a faster way to move handwriting to your computer. Now, if you always type, right, then maybe it's a little tougher for you. It's not as valuable, but still, you can try it. All right. For Creatives on Fire this week, I want to talk about something pretty cool I just figured out, actually. It has to do with my savings account. So, obviously, JH and I go to a few or several conventions every year. And a lot of times I try to, like, kind of put money to the side specifically for that, so that when the time comes, it's not like, oh, all of a sudden I got to shell out a bunch of money for a hotel that I'm not ready for or whatever, right? Well, I figured out the other day, so I use Ally. I bank with Ally. And first of all, like, on my savings account, they have a very high savings rate. I think we've talked about that before. At present, it's at 4.25%, which is crazy compared to the savings accounts I've had before. So I really like that feature. But what I figured out is that in Ally, they allow you to create buckets inside your savings account, so you can sort of separate things out, which I use. You know, like, I'll have one that's like emergency fund, one that's for, you know, car emergencies or whatever. I kind of break it up so I have money allocated for various disasters and things. But what I realized I could do, though, is I could make a little bucket in there for each of the conventions that we would go to next year, right? Or at least the ones we're planning to go to so far. And the other feature that I realized was neat is it allows you to put, like, a goal date for each bucket. So based on when the convention is, I can put that goal date, and then it kind of organizes them for me. So now I know, like, I can dump money into the first convention that we have, and I know what date that is. So I put that date in there, and now I know to get that bucket full to that goal, and then I can move on to the next one and get that bucket full to that goal, so that as the conventions, you know, actually arrive and we go to them, I've got the money specifically sitting there ready to go. And, you know, I try to make that number a little higher than what I actually think. And so a cool feature it has is if you just delete the bucket, it dumps it back to, like, the core bucket. So if we go to a convention and say I saved $500 for that convention and we only spent $300, well, afterwards I could just delete that and it would dump it back into the core. And I could just move it to the next convention, right? And have a head start there, whichever one I'm saving towards.
You can also just transfer it, move it between buckets.
Yeah, you can do that too. Yeah, that's the other thing as well, right?
Yeah, especially if it's a convention you know you're going to return to year after year, rather than recreating that bucket every time, you could just transfer the money.
Yeah. Yeah, or you could just use the same bucket year after year, I guess, if you wanted to, right?
Yeah.
So I thought that was a really cool feature and a really cool way to sort of, like, I always have the money ready. It's just, where's it sitting? So it, I guess for me, it's a warm and fuzzy to have it sitting in a bucket with that convention's name on it, ready to go, mm-hmm. so that I don't really have to think about it or worry about it at all, you know?
Right. It's just kind of a good reminder that, yeah, I put money aside for this and not have to think about it and wonder if you missed something.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, again, like, I'm not necessarily advocating for Ally Bank, although I have been very, very happy with that move. I know there are other good mm-hmm. ones as well. I'm not as familiar with them, but I think it's definitely worth, like, I'm a big believer in having a pretty hefty emergency fund, right? And like runway. If I'm just being totally honest on the whole financial independence side of it, one thing that I like to have is a year's worth of my expenses in a savings account. And if I can draw 4% on that number, that's fantastic. Because otherwise it's just invested and I'm really hoping for, you know, 6 or 8. But if I can get a guaranteed 4, that's pretty good too, right?
Right.
And I know it's not actually guaranteed yeah. because it's, you know, it's sort of a variable and they'll change it over time, but they're typically, the whole time I've had it, it's always been higher than the bank I used for years previously.
Yeah. I was about to say it did start going down during the pandemic. They'd send you emails about it. So you just get an email every few days or weeks. So they were dropping it again, but like basically as soon as, you know, stores started opening again and things started getting better, it just climbed right back up.
Yeah. Yeah, it did. Now, what's funny is, oh, hello there. Hello there, train ad. Right in the middle of us talking about exciting savings accounts. To be continued.
Are you experiencing hairy feet, an adventurous itch, or butt pain? Then you should buy a copy of J.H. Fleming's latest novel, Music the Gathering, A Most Unusual Assassin. What does a fantasy novel have to do with those conditions, you ask? Nothing. But it's so damn good you'll forget all about your furry little hobbit feet. Don't wait. Buy it now and tell your doctor how awesome it is. Side effects may include magical adventure, hours of introverted fun, great characters, tears of joy, and death. Buy it now.
All right. I don't really remember where I let off, but I know what I would like to talk about. So funny story, actually, as I'm talking about Ally. So for years, I used Arvest Bank, and I didn't like have any real drama with them or anything. It's very common where we live. There's a lot of them around, so it's a pretty convenient bank if you live where we live. But I liked Ally considerably better, so I moved out of it, and I was like, well, no looking back. I will probably never go back to Arvest. But I actually did. I never closed my accounts for one. I just kept them. But if you happen to live in the part of the country that we live in, or maybe even if you don't, what was funny is whenever I went and established Happy Omega Publishing LLC, which is my official publishing house that I own, I wanted to get a business account for it, a business checking and a business savings. And through all my many Google searches, what kept coming back was that for a free business checking and business savings, Arvest was one of the best in the nation. So I ended up going back and reopening my business accounts with them. So from that aspect, they are actually really, really great for business checking and business savings, and they don't cost anything. So, yeah.
Yeah, I did not go with them for that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
For personal banking, I like Ally way better. But the one benefit I do have, because I have both, so I have my Ally checkings and savings, I have my Arvest personal checking and savings still from the olden days, and I have my business stuff. The one benefit that I do get is that because there's an Arvest everywhere nearby, if I need to pull out money, which Ally's pretty good for that, like if I just have to go to an ATM, they'll reimburse me up to $10 or $15 a month in ATM fees. But let's say like I need a bigger amount of cash, well, then it's convenient that I can transfer from my ally to my Arvest and then walk into the Arvest and get what I need.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I don't remember what you did for your business account.
Bluevine.
How do you feel about Bluevine?
I like it a lot. I have a checking and a savings. The savings doesn't have nearly the same, the interest rate like the ally one does. Yeah. But I have no drama with them. They've been great. So initially, I'll take this back a minute. I was with a bank called Simple Bank. And then they were bought by, I think it was PNC. And then they were bought by TD Bank. And there was going to be, I don't know, some sort of drama with that. So I'm tired of having my account numbers change and my logins change. Like, I'm just going to pick my own. So I switched to Bluevine at that point.
Yeah, plus TD Bank sounds dirty.
It does. Despite that, it's actually a legitimate bank that lots of people use. But
you were not wrong. I like to get some ones and go to the TD Bank. Yeah.
But yeah, Bluevine's been really good. I like them a lot. I still prefer Ally as well. If they offered the business checking, I would totally go with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I probably would too. I've been very impressed with them. I'm glad I swapped. I've got no drama from a checking standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually really easy too. Like, that's another thing, just for, I guess, another shout out for them. One of the things I like is other banks I've interacted with, sometimes like transferring money between banks is more painful than it needs to be. And it's really easy for me to move money to or from my Arvest from my Ally account. So like, I don't,
mm-hmm.
like if I want to transfer money from Arvest to Ally, I would think that I would log into my Arvest to action that, but it's way easier to action it from the Ally side, whether I'm giving or taking, you know?
Right. So. Yeah, I have, when I get paid, I have different accounts that I put money in. Some of, some would be my savings account, which is just right there. But then I have other accounts like the Bluevine. I have a Capital One checking. I feel like there's another I'm forgetting. Anyway, point is, getting the money into those different accounts is super easy. And if not for that, I probably have to use PayPal, which I've never had trouble with, but it does take a few extra days.
Yeah, and I've
run into the transaction to go through.
I've run into some challenges here or there that were weird for whatever reason. On the whole, though, nothing negative really to say about PayPal. I've had some weird things, but on the whole, they've been pretty good.
Yeah. The only negative I've had with them is they won't let you change the defaults. Like say you send me money for something, and I'm not quick enough and I don't transfer the money out of PayPal, and then I have something that I purchased with PayPal, it will use that money before it uses my chosen bank account or credit card or anything.
Oh, yeah. Right.
So let's say that wasn't my money. You send it to me to give to someone. Well, now I've used their money to purchase whatever, and I have to then send them the remaining amount plus transfer from my own bank for the difference. So I ended up actually making a second PayPal account. So that way I have one that I use for purchasing stuff and one that I use for when people send me money. So that way they cannot cross-contaminate anymore.
Not a bad idea. Although I do like the Zelle thing in Ally. I think I've only used it to go from one Ally to another, but that one's pretty good.
Yep.
It's the same concept.
Yeah, that one's not bad either.
For sending money to someone. And it's like instant, I think, or at least a few minutes or whatever. So that's pretty cool. Just back on the buckets thing for just final thoughts on that. Like, obviously, what made me excited about it was using it for conventions. But obviously, you can use it for whatever you need, right?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have the buckets when I first signed up for Ally, so I have like 5 savings accounts in there for different purposes. But now I've got like all these different buckets inside the savings accounts, which are really a really nice way to organize everything.
Right. Yeah, I ended up with a bunch of different buckets as well. I don't have convention ones yet, but I've got, you know, like we talked about the emergency fund. I'm trying to remember what else I have in there now. I'm going to have to go look. I'm curious. I need to make a car one. That's one I need to do.
You have a special account for buying Filbert presents.
I do not.
Oh. Well, on that note, I want to finish this podcast, so tell the people where to find you. Not buying any presents.
You can find me on all the social media places. Also at jhfleming.net. You can hire me on Fiverr as an editor. My band Wildwood Minstrels is also on all the music sites. So yeah, find me on any of those places.
And I am Philip Dreher Duncan. You can find me at philipdreherduncan.com. You can find my books at places books are sold, and you should, because as you just learned, despite the many buckets in JH's savings account, there is not one for buying me presents. And listen, guys, I got on this thing the other day. When I was a kid, I loved action figures. Action figures were my jam. It was G.I. Joe. It was Star Wars. It was Marvel Comics, the X-Men, and Ninja Turtles, Transformers, all of it. That was my, that was everything to me. There was nothing better on my Christmases than to walk in there and look under the tree and see those action figure shaped boxes. Well, the other day, just randomly, I don't know why. Best Buy sent me some kind of email and it had action figures in it. I was like, Best Buy sells toys? And then I started looking at action figures. And there were so many that I would have murdered to have when I was a kid. I would have been like Chucky walking around with a little butcher knife, chopping people up if I could have got some of these. So I was sitting there going, you know what? I might just like go drop a couple $100 and buy myself a bunch of action figures and wrap them up and put them under the Christmas tree so that I get to open them and pretend I'm a kid again. I know that's weird, but my point is JH clearly does not have a budget for buying me presents. And I would like to get myself some action figures to put under the Christmas tree for me. So if you guys would buy my books, that would go a long way. JH is telling me to wrap this thing up. She's making faces at me. So, all right. This has been another episode of Future Bestseller. Bye.